The Team 3 report was on minorities, the minorities question in Yugoslavia and in the breakup of Yugoslavia. And the time period was limited to 1991 to 1992. The team was originally headed by Drago Roksandić here, who will comment in a minute, and Denny Rusino, known to many or maybe most of you, but Denny died, walked out in front of a pickup truck and was killed about a year ago or so, and I was asked to take his place, so I've done that. This report has five basic points to it. Three of them, I think, simply confirm conventional wisdom. Namely, fortunately for the paper, it turns out the minority issue was important in the collapse of Yugoslavia. And we're not talking minority issues here like Slovaks in Vojvodina or Hungarians in Slovenia or something like that, but really in this paper mostly about Serbs in Croatia and Serbs in Bosnia. So that the minority issue is very important for that group, for others too, but those are the ones that are concentrated on this paper. And it was important for the international community. Much of the rhetoric of the Donatare Commission, for example, and others was about minority rights. So we simply confirmed that. The report agrees that the international community might have handled the situation better, and many have said that. And we also have concluded that the local leadership had a heavy responsibility for the outrages and so forth that were part of this. But two things in the report are a little bit go a little bit beyond those conventional areas. One of them is regards the Serbian claims of the claims of some Serbs or Serb propaganda machine or whatever that Alija Izetbegović was a fundamentalist Muslim who sought to create an Islamist republic, and this stirred up a lot of emotion among Serbs, particularly in Bosnia. And so I thought it was good. It would be good to take a closer look at Izetbegović. So there's quite a bit about Izetbegović in this report. There's a lot of biographies, maybe, I don't know how many, 15, 20 biographies of Milosevic out there. Two or three are just appearing now on Tudjman, but to best of my knowledge, there's not anything on of a similar depth on Izetbegović. So that's the justification there. And most of the time in the report is spent on his pre-1990 writings, particularly the Islamic Declaration, which Serbs cited often, but also his book Islam in the West, his very interesting book Notes from Prison, and then his memoirs, which were written later. And the conclusion, of course, is that those claims about Izetbegović really are not true. Yes, Izetbegović was a religious man. And among the politicians in Bosnia, he headed the group or the party that was more religiously oriented, the section of his party that was more religiously oriented. And yes, as a Muslim, he did seek to purify, I suppose, his faith by returning to its ethical, what he considered its ethical bases. But I interpret this more as a cry or a plea to the members of his community to live an ethical life, to live in truth, as Havel said. I think he fits nicely into the anti-political movement of dissidents in other parts of East Central Europe of the 1970s and the 1980s. But in actuality, I think he could be classified as a modernizer, and that in the way that Bernard Lewis speaks of modernizing Muslims. He likes the European work ethic. He thinks that that's important for creating a modern place. He thinks the European community, he thought the European community was an excellent example of how to combat nationalism. He's in favor of Western science and so forth. And primarily he's a Bosnian. He's not an Islamic demagogue. Had he been an Islamic demagogue, he might have accepted the compromise agreement worked out in 1991 by some of his colleagues and Milosevic that would have kept Bosnia in Yugoslavia, Serbian-dominated Yugoslavia, where he might have been able to rally the Muslims in Kosovo and elsewhere behind a Islamic movement, but he didn't do that, and he didn't want to do that. The second discussion that's in more detail here in the report is about the Badinter Commission, 1991-1992. Usually the discussion about the Badinter Commission is about the recognition or lack of recognition of Croatia, Slovenia, Macedonia, and so forth. But those, since a lot of work has been done on that, this report doesn't concentrate too much on that, but rather talks about various inconsistencies and implications of the Badinter Commission's reports. They did provide the necessary legal grease for the collapse of Yugoslavia, of course, and they played an important role here. Somehow or other, the Badinter Commission and the related activities of the Conference on Yugoslavia were needed to make this into some kind of legal event for the breakup to enter into European law, and they didn't have much time, very short period of time, the Badinter Commission, to come up with its rulings. But here's two basic points among several that are made in the report. One of the first decisions they made was that Yugoslavia was dissolving, that is to say, was in a state of dissolution, and Croatia and Slovenia had not seceded. This was an important decision in several regards. It had to do with property left from the state and so forth, but it also had to do with the international law that secession of ethnic groups is, in terms of international law at least, illegal. But they made that decision on the basis of the fact that the central government in Belgrade was no longer in control of the situation in Bosnia, I mean in Croatia and Slovenia. And this principle they later applied in a less benign way in December 1991 when they also concluded in a totally different decision here, which we don't need to go into further detail, that the Bosnian government was not in control of the Serbian regions of Bosnia, which of course they were not, because the several entities among the Serbs in Bosnia had created their own, what they thought considered autonomous entities. And therefore the Badinter Commission decided that a referendum would be useful. In other words, the principle used to justify the breakup of Yugoslavia led to permitting the Serbian enclaves to do the same to Bosnia, which is not, I'm sure, what the Badinter Commission intended. A second thing that is, I think, of larger importance in the big picture of Europe, the development of international law and European, especially European concepts of human rights, is that the Badinter Commission insisted on the acceptance, and not only that, but the Commission, the Conference on Yugoslavia, the Carrington Conference, they insisted on the acceptance of minority rights. And I see this as, and there's some interesting details there, but I see this as one of the milestones along the way of the last 20, 25 years or so that has helped resolve that fundamental principled contradiction between self-determination of peoples on the one hand and the inviolability of state borders on the other, both of which are accepted international principles. But if you use the Wilsonian idea of World War I period as to the meaning of self-determination of people, somehow it meant, for Wilson at least, the creation of new states in East Central Europe. But how can you do that if the state borders are inviolable? These have been in conflict and have always caused problems for those writing treaties and agreements and resolutions about human rights after World War II. In the last 20 or so years, however, this has been in the process of resolution. And although the Badinter Commission and the Carrington Conference were applying ideas that had been developed elsewhere, it seems to me that they are an important milestone in what I think today is the resolution in theory at least, if not in practice, but at least in theory, the resolution of that contradiction, namely, yes, self-determination of peoples is a valid principle, so is the inviolability of state borders, but what self-determination of peoples now means is the full acceptance within those state borders of minority rights. And this is the way I think that that contradiction is in the process of being resolved, and I think these events in Yugoslavia and this sternness and the enthusiasm, or I should say the conviction with which those two entities attempted to enforce or to encourage the entities in the Yugoslav, in the collapsed Yugoslav space to enforce minority rights, I think is an important milestone there. Final word, let me just say one final thing though here, and that is, it's true that this report suggests that the international community handled the Yugoslav tensions poorly, but the report concludes by saying that, quote, it is vital to recognize that Europe did not create those tensions and was not responsible for the actions of those who instigated or carried out the wars or for the ethnic cleansing, atrocities, and mutilations that characterized them. And I think this is an important point also that often, I think, in the region and outside of it, Europe is blamed somehow. It's true they didn't pursue in my opinion, do the best job they could have, but let's not forget that the tensions and the conflicts actually grew out of the situation on the ground in the former Yugoslavia and not in London, in Paris, in Berlin, or wherever. Thank you.